So what do we have today? What do you have on your plate?
I have leftover potatoes, onions, and carrots. I have a beet salad, some battered and fried, or maybe baked tofu. Baked tofu. And then an oatmeal bake with berries.
Lovely. And there's also, looks like peanut butter brownies as well. That's me taking brunch at the 2 Dickinson Street Co-op. It's a warm environment, not exactly the dead, silent space they tell you to record podcasts in. Someone is playing music as people chat and serve themselves food. I had to dash, but before I left...
Also, if you want to have brunch, you're welcome to.
That's very kind. I'm actually meeting someone for lunch, but I do appreciate it. For the Daily Princetonian, I'm Theo Wells-Spackman.
And I'm Sinai Farrell. You're listening to Daybreak.
Princeton is famous for its eating clubs. The F. Scott Fitzgerald aesthetic of exclusive luxury and the contemporary iterations of that culture are synonymous with the university. But the reality is, only about 60% of Princeton upper-class students are members of an eating club. According to last year's senior survey, about 17% of people just stay on the meal plan.
If you're not in a club and you don't eat in the dining hall, you're considered independent by the university. In the class of 2023, roughly 18% of upper-class students appear to be in this position. At the most basic level, being independent just means you're expected to use the money you're not spending on a club or the dining plan to buy groceries. Then, you're free to just cook on your own schedule.
My name is Shirley Yang. I am class of 2024, majoring in molecular biology. And I have been independent for about a year and a half since my junior spring. In my sophomore spring, I did join an eating club just to see what it would be like. And then I quickly realized I hate walking all the way up the hill just to get food.
Even though she's responsible for all her own food, Yang has independent living down to a science.
Since my roommates and I have pretty similar preferences, we decided that each person will basically meal prep dinner for about 3 to 4 days. So it kind of works out that I only really need to cook dinner once every 2 weeks.
Over the years, students have also developed a number of more institutional ways to make the independent living process easier. Food co-ops were created to meet this need.
I'm Anna. I'm a senior, and I've been in 2D since my junior fall, so almost 2 years.
2D is the colloquial name for the 2 Dickinson Vegetarian Food Co-op. 2D gets its name from the address of the quaint old house that serves as its base of operations, located at number 2 Dickinson Road. It's been open since 1977.
My official title name is Minister of Truth.
Clearly, they're a whimsical group and unafraid to lead into it. But what is a co-op in this context exactly?
It's a group of students who cook together and eat together. Basically, the premise of the co-op is there are about 50 people. Everyone cooks once a week, and we have dinner served every night. Your cook shift is once a week. You cook with between 4 and 6 people. And for dinner shifts, we serve dinner every night at 6:30. We don't really have leaders or presidents, so to speak, in the co-op. We're more of an anarchy. But everyone has a chore. So, because we're completely student-run. So everything that gets done around here is done by students. So my chore is to be in charge of the other chores and to basically act as the liaison between the co-op and the university. We have people who go grocery shopping for stuff that we can't buy in bulk. Produce we get from a place called Zone 7, which sells to restaurants and other bulk operations. So it's much cheaper than if we were just to go to the grocery store and get a bunch of produce.
It makes sense. Everything's cheaper in bulk. All the same, 50 people sounds like a lot, especially if you're trying to make tofu for them all.
We've got a huge wok that's 3 feet across or something.
But as far as I was concerned, there was a gap in all this discussion.
What do people do for lunch?
It's a great question. So we have, what we try to do for every dinner, every meal in general, is make enough so that there are leftovers. So a lot of people come here for leftovers. Sometimes I'm like, I don't even know where I eat lunch. Like, I kind of cobble it together. Brunch is my lunch on the weekends and Friday, which is a new cook shift we just added this semester, but it's working out really well.
In other words, lunch is complicated, but in many ways, you get what you pay for.
Do you happen to know how much the fees are per person?
Yeah, so we have $600 per semester are our dues.
By contrast, eating clubs can easily amount to around $10,000 for the full academic year. Each meal is a significant production. Given the demand from a growing student body, co-ops have a lot of people to serve. And that's why there are four others, in addition to 2D, each with their own vibe.
My name is David. I'm a class of 2024. I'm from Millburn, New Jersey, which is in North Jersey. And I'm the treasurer for IFC.
IFC is the acronym for the International Food Co-op. Apparently, it's not much more international in cuisine than the other co-ops, according to David. David Schuston helped rekindle the co-op when he returned after the pandemic, only to find the whole organization had evaporated.
There was nobody in the co-op when people were returning to campus at the end of COVID-19. I got together with one of my friends, who's my roommate now, and then two other students expressed interest in putting together or joining that co-op also. They reached out to the president of IFC at the time, and all four of us got together and we reorganized the co-op and brought the membership back up to what it is now.
What's the membership now, out of interest?
I think it's about 30.
Healthy, in other words. So there was clearly demand. Why did it fall to David and Co. to take on this rebuild? And why had membership faded?
I think that the most challenging thing was just getting people to believe in the idea that we can cook for each other and do it consistently and trust each other. I was very scared at the beginning that we would have a day where we don't have anything to eat or we have to order out. And in the history of IFC, as far as I can remember, we have never had to do that.
There was also another problem, one which, in a small way, every sophomore deals with wherever they choose to eat. They had to start over socially.
Towards the beginning, when we were first restarting IFC, nobody knew each other. There were like groups of people, maybe two people joined together, and they knew each other, but nobody knew each other, right? And so that made things like, when you went to dinner, you were eating with a bunch of strangers initially. We invited people to our room and had like a little get together, talked. It was like almost like a dinner party kind of vibe. And slowly people started getting to know each other through those socials, but also through sharing meals and cooking together and decorating the space and making it their own.
It was interesting talking to people about this because losing a sense of community is what people seem most worried about when joining a co-op.
But clearly, people make it work. Through sharing a space and food, things fall into place.
And you mentioned that this is the only co-op to have its kind of own space. What effect does that have, do you think?
I think it has a huge effect, and I'm very grateful that we have this area where we can like mingle and have social events and do work.
Anna Pinkerton with 2D again.
I think this idea of like stepping away from the mainstream Princeton funnel of joining a club and like doing something intentional and joining a community which you're actively a part of, I think that's something that I especially value about 2D, is like it runs because we all love it and we all put in the work.
In other words, shared responsibility becomes the basis for community. But for Yang and many other students, there are other factors to balance here.
I'm also on full aid here, so I think a big factor for me was just like how financially accessible these clubs would be.
This is pretty complicated. For students on financial aid, the university increases their allocated budget for food after sophomore year. This, theoretically, is intended to offset the cost of an eating club for anyone who wants to join. In many ways, it's the most they can reasonably be expected to do in this direction. The thing is, if you don't join one, all of that money goes straight to you instead.
I don't remember the specific amount, but it's just such a large, like outrageously large sum of money that's coming to me at the beginning of each semester.
What kind of fraction of the stipend do you think you use for food?
I'd say definitely less than like one fifth of it. My three other roommates who I live with in Spelman, we're all independent, so we also just share grocery costs. That's been a really helpful like cost-cutting method.
For someone in Yang's position, the stipend is hard to justify parting with. Paradoxically, for students who are a bit more fortunate and off aid, eating clubs could be even less affordable.
I'm Savannah Pobray, class of 2023.
Before joining the Real Food Co-op, Savannah was a member of Tower Club.
The decision that went into the transition to RFC was mainly monetary. Obviously, Princeton does not do scholarship on merit, and I did not qualify for their means of financial aid.
Savannah's position is a familiar one for many Princeton families. She comes from a middle-class background, but her path to financial stability has not been a simple one.
Sometimes, like, right in the middle is a part that is really difficult for a lot of families when you have one parent working and they're making a decent amount, but you still have three kids, and so that estimation can't go higher.
In other words, she's caught in the middle of the socioeconomic curve, where attending a private university is often costly for the student's future. So, when it comes to luxuries like eating clubs, Pobray just had to make it work.
So, I took on federal and private loans to cover my last couple years that my parents couldn't help with. I still have them now. I took on a lot of part-time jobs at school to help pay for it, and I had some savings. But once Tower also neglected to give me financial aid, I had to back down. And that's why RFC became a decision for me my senior year.
Unfortunately, this decision required Savannah to sacrifice the community she had developed in Tower.
It was a decision that not a lot of my friends understood. I think a lot of them were very kind about it, but it was difficult, definitely, because I had created such a social life within Tower and within the eating clubs, and I desperately wanted to be a part of that. That was a little difficult, the social aspect, because I felt like at dinner time at like 5 or 6 p.m. every day, I had to like go, and I really enjoyed the conversation at RFC, and I loved meeting the new people, but it just felt like a bit of a disconnect at times.
Nevertheless, she doesn't regret the decision.
I think that I got a lot of validation from knowing that, like, I worked hard, / my friends and my community worked hard to make this meal. So if you're looking for any type of community, or even if you're in a different dining plan or eating plan or anything like that, I think it's worth checking out.
Perhaps it's worth thinking about how much we rely on institutions to structure and simplify our personal and social lives. The word has popped up in most of my conversations. But how intentional are we about our social lives?
Again, I said earlier, like, there's something very intentional about being in a community that you have to be a part of for it to function. And I think that's, like, really beautiful. And also, big picture, I don't think Princeton prepares people very well for the real world.
I think at the age of, like, 18 to 22 or however old people are, if you're still being, like, served your food and not having to wash your dishes and things like that, there is a certain thing about that that bothers me a little bit.
I'm not saying that this is, like, the real world either. It's definitely very comfortable and coddled as well.
That's true. It is. But all the same, there's a level of security in an institution. And sometimes when push comes to shove, you have to figure stuff out yourself.
I feel like you can always spot an independent person if they have Tupperware, and they're just like kind of secretly like scraping like food into their Tupperware in the D hall.
In other words, they're making it work. Despite the extra hassle, it seems like demand for co-ops remains high, especially among upper class students.
Do you get a lot of people here who like sort of were in a club for a bit, kind of did not enjoy the vibes, and sort of switched over?
Yeah, we have a lot of people like that. Right now, we actually had a huge influx of seniors this semester, like joining for their senior spring.
As the university's population increases, the eating club system is under increasing pressure as it experiences higher demand. It's unclear exactly how this will affect the food co-ops, but as demand continues to be high, Princeton's independent eaters continue to thrive on their own terms.
The kinds of people we want to join, anyone who's interested, anyone who wants to have some kind of sense of community that we have and feel like some sense of responsibility for the kitchen and for other people in the co-op, just come down for dinner.
That's all for Daybreak today. Today's episode was written by Sinai Farrell and me, sound engineered by Vitus LaRue and me, and produced under the 148th Managing Board of The Prince. Our theme was composed by Ed Horan, class of 22. For the Daily Princetonian, I'm Theo Wells-Spackman. Have a wonderful day.